All right, you're back in the DFSR here with our NBA podcast for Friday, April 14th. I'm Doug Norrie. That is
James Davis.
And we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here today to talk NBA action for actually the first day of the playoffs, which is going to start Saturday. But, buddy, we don't record podcasts on Saturday.
No,
it's Saturday. Even we're allowed a day of rest.
It's sacred, except for me, because I'll be working on we'll both actually be working on Saturday, just not recording
100%, podcasts. Just not doing podcasts. we work all the time, but just not going to be talking to each other over Zencast like we're doing right now. DFSR.com/membership is where you can go to get a free, I believe, 3-day trial now of a projection system. That's optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings powered by Lineup Lab. Good news is you head over there to that membership. That includes NBA playoffs lineups as well as baseball as well. So it all falls under one membership blanket. We think it's about as good as a deal that you will find in the industry. It's free for 3 days and then just $29.95 a month after that. And you're all good to go. Optimal Lineups powered by our good friends at Lineup Lab. And yeah, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month afterwards. All right, we're going to talk about the four games that we have coming up here for Saturday NBA as the playoffs start. You know, we kind of slogged through, not us personally, I thought we had a pretty good run down the stretch in NBA, mostly just paying attention to like the finer details of each individual team disaster that teams were kind of throwing out there on a nightly basis. Not all, but a lot of them. And now it kind of shifts with the playoffs starting, where we kind of just go back the other way and we can just count on all the good players playing again. We can count on this, correct? I mean, do you feel confident that we can sort of reshift our mentality back into just the good players are going to play upwards of their high end of their minutes, and we can feel pretty safe.
Yeah. This is where I think, you know, the playoffs actually become a lot more sane than the regular season in general, just because even resting, like what you won't see in the playoffs typically, especially early in series, is a team's up by 12 and they stretch it in the fourth quarter, not bringing their best players back in. You know, little ways you can lose 2 to 4 minutes here and there. You tend not to see that in the early parts of the playoffs. Now, when teams go up 3-0, you know, you kind of fall back into that same routine. But yeah, early on, game one, this is probably the most projectable situation we'll have all season.
Yep, for the most part. We're gonna go game by game here and talk about just which teams we can feel probably most confident about in their rotations. Some teams are a little more crystallized than others, which we'll get into.
That's not to say that this will be easy still. Like, there's still some question marks. It's just not nearly as many as, well, Kawhi Leonard randomly sit or whatever.
Right, exactly. And so the site, well, especially DraftKings, has readjusted its pricing algorithm a little bit to go lower. Typically, the absolute minimum on a guy is 3,000. That's during the regular season. They adjust that a little for the playoffs I think the lowest I saw was somewhere around 2,500. There might be a lower player in there. But so there could be some opportunities for, if you think that, we'll get to some of these guys individually, but there are some players on the lower end of the pricing tier that you can consider. Mostly it's because when we get to the playoffs, there just aren't going to exist any, quote, punt plays. Most of these guys, there's no one's sneaking up on you at this point. There's no Tyler Ulysses of the world who no one's ever heard of, and all of a sudden next day he comes out and plays 42 minutes, and you're like, whoa, how'd that happen? That's just simply not going to be the case here. So you do see some adjustments in prices on these guys, which is why they took an extra day or two to come out with them. And I'll be honest with you, between the two sites, the pricing for me looks pretty tight, and that is going to be the new issue, not new issue, but the issue with you know, putting together lineups is you're not really getting away with anything. You're not going to see, it's going to be very difficult to see those
like Russell Westbrook in loose parts.
Right, exactly. Or like, you know, Russell Westbrook at 80% start. I mean, he's not on the slate, but right. You know, like, you know, LeBron James at a 90% start because they're playing for something and no one else is. That's just not going to be the case. So let's go game by game. We'll talk about each one. We'll kind of give a bird's eye view of each of these series to start and where we think you can maybe grab some value kind of going in. The first game is the Pacers and Cleveland. Cleveland sort of, I wouldn't call them limping into the playoffs, but man, it sure feels like it. For a team to finish number two in the East, it really feels like, the narrative around them is like they finished eighth, kind of. Like, that feels like the mood, I think, is like they basically just snuck into the playoffs, which clearly isn't the case. They did lose the first.
I think it's much more a case of they did a risk-reward calculation with how much they had been working guys. And they were like, you know, first seed, second seed, who cares? Like, we're going to make the playoffs. We know we're better than these teams. Let's not overdo it. I think I'm not worried at all about them.
Yeah, no, I guess I'm not either. I'm just mostly saying the mood around them doesn't seem good. Although I was listening to a podcast the other day, and I think it was Zach Lowe's podcast, and he was talking to I think Brian Windhorst, who's the writer that followed kind of has sort of followed LeBron's career arc, and he had said the Cavs have always thrived off of just sort of giving themselves some sort of unnecessary drama around it, yeah, adversity, and then fighting against their own self-imposed adversity and then winning. So I don't know if that's the kind of situation we're looking at here. Indiana comes in clearly underdogs, though. You know, what determinations can we make about Indiana's, let's say, rotations in this game? Maybe we'll make the rotations and minutes here kind of the theme of who stands to play big minutes, who's in a good spot to actually put up, you know, solid points per dollar value on their prices. Let's start with Indiana in this one. Where do you think, you know, is it just kind of going to be the Paul George show here? Do you think you kind of see an opportunity for Teague and Turner going against those weaker parts of the Cavs defense? How do you like the Pacers?
Yeah, I think the Pacers are they're a tricky one here, because while a lot of these series are quite close, the Indiana Cleveland series is actually not projected to be super super close. Cleveland favored by 8.5 points going into this game, and they're not really a strong defensive matchup either. Like, you know, they do have some holes. Like point guard actually is a pretty good example here. You know, Kyrie Irving not known as the best defender, but other than that, you know, they don't play fast. They generally play solid. And a lot of these Pacers guys, Paul George in particular, were kind of just priced accurately going into the end of the season. Paul George, I guess, is the primary example here of a guy who I probably won't play, even though he's going to play 40 minutes a game. I just don't think at his baseline he's a $10,000 player, particularly not in a bad matchup with LeBron. That said, I do think there is value to be found here, particularly for me, Teague and Thaddeus Young, actually. Power forward, pretty shallow today, or on Saturday, I guess. And Young, while he hasn't been super, super reliable, he's still very cheap. And I think that the Pacers will lean on him more in the playoffs. We saw a lot of stretches during the regular season where he played 34 to 36 minutes. He was playing that with things on the line at the end of the season. And I think they kind of go back to that well. So he's a guy with, I think, a 5x baseline and 7x upside. And, you know, if it's coming down between him and playing like some random, like a Jamichael Green or even Serge Ibaka, I would rather take that in that case.
Yeah, no, I think I agree with you there. In a power forward position that is going to be probably thin throughout the playoffs. This is the position we probably struggled with, or people in DFS struggled with the most over the course of the season, is just rostering power forwards. And yeah, Thad at 5,200 on FanDuel seems like, you know, not a bargain necessarily, because if it was the regular season, I don't think you'd consider it. But you need to take some pricing hits where you can get them. And so this middle tier is where that kind of thing exists.
Well, you can't just run away from the position and play some guy for 4,000 in the playoffs. You're just not going to be able to unless an injury pops up. So that can happen in the first round. There's still a lot of teams playing, but yeah, it's not easy sledding right now.
And that's the case against George as well. And I agree with you that I think he's overpriced, and yeah, he's already like he's priced the same as LeBron, I think. And that just strikes me as, oh no, excuse me, LeBron's 11,000. He's 10,000. Sorry, I got the numbers mixed up in my head. But even so, he's just not a $10,000 player. And he's not a $10,000 player coupled with there's no cheap plays to really kind of, you know, wiggle him in and take, like, you know, some maybe negative EV on the on his baseline or whatever. So, yeah, no.
And there's no room for him to grow either. Like, you can look at the Golden State guys, for instance, and say, like, okay, well, they could play 38 to 39 minutes a game in the first round of the playoffs. Georgia was already playing that, so he's already priced that way. It's just not – you're just not doing it with him.
Cleveland side, I'm wondering if you see LeBron's ownership in cash games pretty low just because of that price. Like fitting that $11,000 tag in on this 4-game slate, especially with some of these other games that are just pretty defensive heavy, I would say, especially as we get later on into the day. Do you think at $11,000 he's just, even though he's LeBron and he's the best player on this slate in terms of just like overall probably fantasy upside, is the $11,000 just too much?
Probably, but it's going to be close because, I mean, like if you look at the totals in this game as projected by Vegas, Cleveland has the highest implied total by quite a significant margin. Just to give you a general sense of the overall game scripts and the other teams that we have going today, I mean, we're going to be talking a lot about how bad this slate is probably as the podcast goes on here, but no, they have a 213 total right now. No other game has a 201 total or higher, so to give you a frame of reference, like we would almost never play any single guy from a 200 total game during the regular season unless there was like a 3-game slate or there was some dramatic punt situation or something. So this is the game Vegas is telling us to target. It's a shame that a lot of the guys are pretty expensive, but I think if you are looking to take a big payoff today, then LeBron might be the way to go.
Yeah, and it's funny too, because when you look down a couple of these lines, like they're all, and this is to be expected, right? Like these are all, or at least like the there's some 1 and 8 seed, 2 and 7 seed stuff going on. The lines are not trending toward going to be blowouts, but you know, -8.5 for Cleveland, -7 for Toronto, and -9 for San Antonio. I don't know. That's getting close. it's getting close to where you are worried maybe a little bit up on the minutes. I see Kyrie
maybe
kind
are,
of
but on a slate like this, and for the playoffs, like you just throw the lines out the window. I think that. Again, sitting starters so much less likely in this game one of the series. You know, sending a message, just not randomly giving up a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter. Like, you're going to see these guys play.
No, I totally agree. I think you can consider Kyrie here and Love as well. Love mostly because that power forward position is going to be a tough one to fill, and I think you do see his minutes. I'm hoping the case here has been they've been sort of saving him for the come the playoff time. If you saw 35 to 36 minutes out of him, you could get some payoffs, especially considering Thad Young's to be defending him, and Thad Young just can't really defend anybody. So I think Love.
It's interesting about Thad Young, actually. I agree with you. I think Love's in a good spot. I was looking at the defensive metrics, you know, going through the season, and as they normalized out towards the end of the season, Indiana actually tightened up quite a bit at the power forward position at the end of the year. They actually finished around middle of the pack, as opposed to, you know, being a top five matchup for opposing power forwards like they were much of the season. I'm not really sure what to make of that, because the personnel was actually pretty similar. One thing that was similar is that they did get Paul George back, you know, just, and he was really going hard at the end of the season. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, maybe he's going to be covering the four some. I mean, that won't be the case in this series, actually, with LeBron out there. George is going to have a pretty strict assignment, I would imagine, but just something to keep in mind maybe for future rounds. If I mean, the Pacers aren't going to play future rounds. Just something to keep in mind for a thought experiment that if you're thinking in your own mind.
Do the Pacers take this one? I don't think they just have clearly
no
chance.
Yeah.
Milwaukee and Toronto is the second game that starts at 5:30 Eastern. You have a Toronto team that gets Lowry back just in time at the end of the season, and he was just unleashed at the end of the season. They kind of ran him out there. And he was playing huge minutes just sort of right out of the gate. Really feels like Toronto is going to be the DeRozan and Lowry show. The problem, I think, is are they too expensive against... I mean, well, Milwaukee's a fine-ish defensive team, but, you know, Lowry at 8,600 on FanDuel. You get DeRozan at 8,300. You get a lot of these guys, you know, in the non-LeBron category, and maybe like the non-LeBron, non-Giannis category, you have a lot of guys who are like their teams... 1 and 1A players who are all priced in like this low 8,000s rate, like at least FanDuel just said,
there,
right? Exactly.
They said Love.
Exactly. Like all, they were just like, you know what? All these guys, let's just set them all at 8,300, and we'll just have people pick. I actually don't mind DeRozan here, but I'm wondering your thoughts on Toronto, and then so we know that those two guys, and I would say maybe Ibaka, but then after that, after those three guys, I don't know if we learned enough on the Toronto rotations near the end of the season to like make any real determinations on like what is exactly going to happen for them in game one here.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to unpack in this series. For starters, the Bucks have actually been a bad matchup, an actively bad matchup for every position this season, except for opposing small forwards. And that's kind of funny, of course, because, you know, Giannis is their kind of token small forward. Sometimes he plays point guard. For being really tall and really athletic, he's actually just not a very strong on-ball defender, at least if you want to go by defense first position metrics. And so that would theoretically open up a nice spot for a DFS play, except for Toronto has such a mess at their small forward position.
Right.
That, you know, as we're actually trying to project who's going to play and for how many minutes and whatnot, you know, like, is Damari Carroll really a great play with PJ Tucker in town? I'm just not totally sure. Both those guys, you know, FanDuel's kind of begging you to play either of them. If you think that Toronto is kind of playing possum with their postseason rotations and that they're going to kind of spring the trap and play Damari Carroll for 35 minutes or something, you know, he might wind up being a play. But I think as of right now, that situation is too unknown, and we're probably targeting more, you know, the second game of the playoffs when that situation normalizes a little bit more. I just think they haven't tipped their hand very much, and I could see them going in either direction. You know, they brought Carroll in and paid him a lot to be this kind of defensive stopper. Maybe they think he's got more utility against Giannis, but it really hasn't worked out that way for Toronto either. So so on the Toronto side of the ball, yeah, there's not really a lot of hugely plus matchups. I will say that DeRozan, he's the guy that I look at in this series And I think this, you know, because you see a lot of other kind of random price bumps. Like you mentioned, Kevin Love goes from 7,000 to 8,300. DeRozan was around this price and even more expensive leading into the playoffs. And so I could see him just going right back up to 38, 40 minutes and paying this price kind of handling.
I think this is what you, I think this is going to be, I mean, this is clearly what our system is going to want to do is to avoid the, all the big price guys and just populate lineups with all these $8,000 guys who do stand to play a lot of minutes and have high usage. Like you could see DeRozan having a pretty high usage game here. He still took a ton of shots when Lowry came back in games that mattered, like in sort of like down the stretch leverage games for them, which is you probably have to go like two or three back to find those. The guy was still putting up a lot of shots. I really like him on this slate. They don't have, you know, I don't know if they're going to throw Giannis at him or Snell or like what the plan is like for him on defense. I'm not a total expert in those kind of rotational defensive things, especially for a team like Milwaukee that's just kind of long and guys can just defend different positions. I do like DeRozan mostly because I think in this price range, he stands to put up about as many shots as any player really at a shooting guard position. That's not all that great. I'm totally with you on the question marks revolving or revolving around their small forward position. I don't think that they're just going to all of a sudden bump Damari up to 35 minutes.
It just
doesn't seem like that was the case. And the problem with guys like Tucker, if you know, he's coming cheap, but the thing with Tucker is even off the bench, that guy, when Lowry and DeRozan are on the court, he's just not, he might as well sit on the bench on the offensive side. Like he's not going to shoot at all. Like there, the plan is not to get him the ball. He could play 28 minutes and take, you know, a shot and a half or something like that. So that's what worries me. Even if we thought Tucker was going to play minutes, Milwaukee
to stay away. And then just a real quick nod to the center position, also a stay away for me. I could see JV getting more minutes as the series pushes along, but as of right now, we just don't know enough. We need to see them tip their hand first.
Yeah, I have him at 24 minutes, and I think that's probably realistic. And he could push up to 29 if he really has it going on the offensive end. But that you can't really count on that happening. Milwaukee. Giannis is the other, you know, there's three pretty expensive plays in this slate, and it's George, LeBron, and then Giannis. Giannis, of all the players, would you agree with me that if any player stands to play like low 40s or more minutes, is it Giannis? Like, could you see them just being like, you know what, dude, screw it. Like, we're going to play him the whole game. We're in the playoffs. We made it. And you're just going to play the whole time. Like, is that like a realistic scenario? Or am I kind of like overdoing it on like what his minutes upside is?
No, I don't think you are. I mean, I think, you know, as someone who studied game theory for quite a long time, I would have to think that these teams and the coaches have at least some, you know, they're somewhat fluent in it. And kind of an old game theory adage is that when you're an underdog, you want to increase variance. You know, that's a very, very basic idea, which is to say, like, if you meet someone who's the world's best poker player and the world's strongest man, you should play them in poker instead of having an arm wrestling competition against them, right? So you just increase variance and, you know, you can get lucky. And I think the way the Bucks can increase variance in this series is by giving themselves more exposure to their best player. Maybe Giannis, he's going to be tired in his last 5 minutes, but the upside of having him on the court, I think, is so much higher than, you know, just giving Tony Snell the extra minutes or whoever, right? Or Beasley or, you know, just whoever could possibly be on the court. And those little minutes around the fringes do matter. You know, the last 2 minutes of the third quarter, the points there count as much as the last 2 minutes in the fourth quarter. So I do think we could see, especially in game one of this series, Milwaukee just say, let's just go for it, man. If we don't make it past the second round, who cares? Like, one playoff series would be enough. So therefore, I would say both Giannis and Chris Middleton, I think both of those guys have tremendous upside in this series from a minutes perspective. I do see kind of the other pieces on Milwaukee as being a little bit more volatile, but I think Milwaukee looks at this series, thinks that Middleton and Giannis could, you know, be among the two best players in this series if things break right, and I think they'll go for it.
Yeah, the other guys, I'm totally with you, and that's where we have Giannis at 39 minutes right now, and I'm considering just going higher and just saying, because I do believe that this is what they'll do, because there's no, at this point, this is not like, this is not LeBron at 40 minutes, and we need to be thinking about game six of the finals, you know, and like making sure the guy like is still standing. This is where, like, you know, the Bucks championship is to make it out of the first round. That is probably the loftiest goal they could have envisioned for this season. And they have a real chance here against Toronto. Not a great chance. Toronto is a pretty good team, but
Toronto led the East in point differential.
Yeah, I did read an interesting, this is how Giannis related to that. Giannis, I believe I'm quoting this correctly, was the first player in history to finish in the top 20 in every relevant NBA stat this year. so I'd be scoring, rebounding, assists, blocks, and steals. Finished in the top 20 of each of those stats. First guy ever to do it. Just a fun little fact. Doesn't increase his DFS value at all, except to say guy had an amazing season. I'm going to consider pushing his minutes up. And the rest of those rotational pieces are, Kidd will play these guys in different matchups. And so you can't, like Dellavedova versus Brogdon, you can't trust either side of that coin, I don't think. Thon Maker, who knows, he could play 10 minutes and they could bring him Monroe. It's just, this is, we're going to have to wait and see. And I'm not even sure on some of these guys if we'll even learn a ton after the first game, because these guys, there's no, sometimes seemingly no rhyme or reason to when they play and when they don't, except for what's in Jason Kidd's head. So
I think if you want a good big tournament play, I mean, it's so annoying because all these guys are kind of priced aggressively, but I could see Greg Monroe just topping 30 minutes a couple times in this series. Again, getting a little bit expensive. He could absolutely flop for you, but no one's going to be on the guy at those prices. And, you know, to win a big tournament on a wacky slate like this, definitely stranger things have happened.
And I think he would stay on the court if they needed to score, because he's an offensive first, like kind of big. So he stands to see, I think, a few more minutes if they're trying to play catch up. I'm with you on Monroe. Let's go on to the slower games of the slate evening. Memphis and San Antonio. San Antonio, a favorite here, obviously. We'll start with them. They're another team. They did a lot of resting over the stretch. They kind of just had some weird injury stuff over the course of this year. It didn't feel like San Antonio played a lot of the season at full strength. I know they did, but they were this weird mix of some guys are injured, some guys are resting, sometimes we're just 15-point favorites in this game. And so I'm like trying to think back, because you know we spend every single night looking at teams and just sort of digesting what the plan is. I felt like San Antonio, more than most teams, we were kind of just we're either lowering their minutes because the game was going to get out of hand, we were bumping things up because guys were sitting. Do you feel like you have a good sense of like what the Spurs' plan here is for game one against the Grizzlies?
Yeah, I mean, San Antonio is kind of like probably you were in high school, which is to say you're hot in there and you could have just so hot, captain of the soccer team, whatever. Not in there, you know, you could have tried harder and maybe gotten like better marks when it was all said and done. But just kind of aware that like it's all going pretty much fine. Like we're going to meet the goals we need to meet here.
Right. I can get into college hard and have fun here and just kind of have a nice little balance of not
exactly
really overdoing,
not strain myself, you know, not look back on this time. Right. So I think that they're going to, like, it's kind of a cliche what people talk about. Does this team have an extra gear for the playoffs? Well, I don't think they have an extra gear in terms of just trying hard, but they do have an extra gear in terms of just playing their good players. So if they just look at this and, you know, we're kind of playing possum during the regular season and they say like, okay, well now Kawhi and Aldridge, and they might even just go easy in the first round given this mess of a Memphis team that we'll talk about in a second, but they just look at this and say, dudes, we're going to win this anyway, but like, let's at least go out there and just win the first game. I do think we could see big minutes totals. The two, I think, prime risers, I think Kawhi and LaMarcus are going to play big minutes, but I think in addition to them, I think you could see low 30s minutes for Pau Gasol in the series. I think Tony Parker is a potential candidate. I mean, I think they like Patty Mills right now, and so maybe it just doesn't work out that way, but I think actually one of either Mills or Parker could wind up seeing more minutes, depending on who they, you know, kind of secretly like better. But overall, it's just a tricky series, man. Like the Grizzlies and the Spurs, like I was just going through their defense versus position stats during the regular season. There's not a plus matchup to be had across this series, really. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what you want to do with that. Like, you know, you might have to play them on some point, right? Like if there's a day with only a couple games, you might have to play some Spurs or Grizzlies. But who on the Spurs side are you even seeing here?
I love Kawhi. I think that he's
why didn't you marry him out of curiosity?
probably should. He's a good example, and I'll compare him to Paul George in a sense. He's a good example of where we get gifted the Spurs not having to just play him 40 minutes a game down the stretch and therefore not have the price increase to like these crazy numbers. If Kawhi was playing 40 minutes a game like George was down, he'd be also 10,000, but he wasn't. And so like whatever, no matter which way they kind of like skewed the algorithm here on pricing, he just is at 8,300. Like, that's nuts. If he's going to play 39 minutes, that almost matchup independent for me, for him. And clearly Memphis being a terrible matchup. But if you just take a player who was kind of just playing like 29 minutes a game, and you know, for the last 10 games or so, and then around 35 for like a month and a half, and now just increase him by like 15% expected minutes, which I think is pretty fair to do outside of the blowout, you're just getting a tremendous value on him. And I think that he, for me, it doesn't matter to me that he's playing the Memphis. The slate is short enough. You're just getting him at a discount because they just didn't have to play him down the stretch.
Memphis, if that makes third sense. Best in the league against
doesn't
the
matter to me.
Third slowest pace in the league.
I get it. And that's all baked into our system. Our system gets that also. Like it understands it, and it's still saying it doesn't. Like he's. I would say I'm probably saying this off the cuff, and I'll go back and I always say I'm going to go back and do something, and I probably won't. But I believe this to be true. If you give him his point per minute expectation is basically the same as George's, I would say, if not maybe a little bit higher, except that he's 1700 less on FanDuel, has a worse matchup. I agree, but it's not percentagely worse than like what.
But isn't that a false dichotomy? Because like, we're not picking between Leonard and George tonight, right? Like we're just. Like, you don't have to play either. So him being... Yeah, George is obviously absurdly priced at 10,000.
I'm just using it as a comparison. I know you're
so
not...
So quick, no halftime challenge real quick. Okay, so no halftime. In case you don't know out there, is a great fantasy app for people who like to play daily fantasy, but maybe don't want to do all the work of trying to set lineups and, you know, put all the roster prices together. Because what you do in no halftime is you pick one player, opponent gets a player that you actually choose for them if someone chooses to accept your challenge, and then you go from there. So the way it would work is you would say, I like Kawhi Leonard straight up over Paul George tonight. You issue that challenge to the No Halftime community, and someone elects to take it or not. So if no one takes it, you get your money back. If they do, then it's game on. So it's nohalftime.com. Download the app. Use promo code DFSR MLB25, because we're in baseball season now, and you can get a $25 bonus up to your $25 deposit. So straight up, head-to-head, who do you think scores more points, Kawhi Leonard or Paul George?
Well, okay, it's really close, but the problem is, so I'm going to say George, but, and I know that S is on my point, but
no,
it doesn't.
Because the 1700 matters. Yeah.
Exactly, and that's the difference. And so I would take George just eking it out over him. Our system has a coin flip. If I took Kawhi up one more minute, it would be a virtual tie. But
all right, so Doug, you ready for the big reveal?
Yeah.
I think Kawhi's a great play tonight too. I just wanted to get the best out of you. Okay. And I think I did. I think I succeeded.
On the Memphis side, this team, they kind of fall to me in the same.
Well, real quick, is that's all we can do with the Spurs though? Just Kawhi?
No, I like Aldridge too. I think you could see a situation where you maybe, if you thought Danny Green was going to be out there for a lot of minutes, it's starting two, then I have him at 29 minutes. He's a very good defender. If they wanted to keep him out there for longer because they just could kind of afford to do it, he could end up becoming a nice little pump play. Gasol as well. Like, he's another guy where, you know, what's the plan with Gasol? Like, we kind of talked about this on the air. Like, what's the Spurs plan, if you had a guess right now, with Pau Gasol? He's still coming off the bench, but, like, in terms of minutes, brother on brother narrative, baby, too. You get that. So what do you think? What do you stand to like put him in terms of just how much he's going to see the court?
I think he plays 30 minutes. That's what my gut tells me. I think he plays fewer minutes if the game stretches and is kind of out of hand. I think he plays fewer minutes if the Spurs fall behind. But I don't really think any of that is in play for tonight. I think it's going to be a reasonably close game. And I think he'll play a lot of minutes. I think it's interesting with these Spurs guys, because I'll say this isn't the case for a lot of these teams. Like, I would say the opposite about Cleveland, for instance. But I think to a man, the Spurs starting five are all cheaper than they will be a week from now. Like, mm-hmm. Aldridge in particular, 6,300, that price is a joke. I get that I think that they've just simply overweighted the matchup. Yeah. As I was looking up and down, because Memphis truly is a bad matchup. Like, their third worst matchup in the league for power forwards. I get why Aldridge would be cheap as well. San Antonio and Memphis are first and second worst matchup in the league for centers this season. So it's kind of a center clash down there. But yeah, they're just all too cheap. So somebody has got to score the points, right? Yeah, this game only has a 200 total, but that's still 200 points are going to go in the basket. And so, yeah, I think it's, they're all too cheap. It's Gasol, Aldridge, Kawhi, they're all in play for me.
And I think, like I said, we get gifted by they've downgraded it for the matchup, and they also downgraded it because if you look at like just their like season stats,
yeah, they're rolling averages that aren't meaningful right now.
Exactly. They're not good comps for like what is going to happen theoretically, what's going to happen now. Memphis side, I think we have question marks here as well. We have Marc Gasol and Conley as lock that up in terms of just like those guys seem like they're going to play a ton of minutes, and I do think that they're probably both fantastic values as well. After those two guys, I stared down this team and I was like, man, what is, like, where do we set the minutes on these guys? Like, is this a Raptors situation? Like, where it's like, we're just going to need to see the first game, like, what the plan was, and then just kind of hope that they stay consistent with it. Like, do you have the same feeling, or do you have maybe more insight than I do?
No, I think you're right on. I actually do think it's funny how much exposure we could wind up having to this game, given how, on paper, bad a matchup it is. But, yeah, I think the prices are a little bit overcorrected, and, again, overcorrected for the other teams, like Cleveland as well. So, Conley going up against the Spurs. Yeah, the Spurs have not been terrible against opposing point guards this season, but I think a lot of that is, you know, kind of how they've been able to shuffle their defensive rotations, and just the fact that they've been beating everybody so badly that, you know, guys like Tony Parker, Patty Mills, who aren't great defenders, haven't been exposed quite as much. Memphis is kind of a tricky situation because they tend to play someone at the other shoot, at the other guard position, who's not an offensive threat. So, you know, you could see a situation, for instance, where the Spurs hide Tony Parker on Tony Allen, and, you know, Danny Green covers Conley, which is a much worse situation for him than vice versa. So, you know, maybe we don't want to wind up going in that direction. I'm going to have to look at it more as we go throughout the day. But, yeah, I think, again, Conley too cheap. He was an $8,000 player when he was playing peak minutes. Gasol too cheap as well. I don't think we're going to get it for the whole series. So, you know, we're not going to be re-recording this podcast every day, in case you haven't figured that out, because the same teams are going to be playing each other for the next week and a half. But that's one to keep an eye on, because I think Conley and Gasol, good values for starters, won't be in the too distant future.
And I think what I'm going to probably struggle with the most with Memphis is, where do we just slot guys like Vince Carter and Tony Allen and Jamichael Green in terms of minutes? It's been very up and down with those players over basically the last month. You can look at games where you would consider to be high leverage games, and even those don't give you great comps in terms of, like, what maybe the plan is going to be, because they've also dealt with their own injury issues sort of over the last, you know, month and a half, I would say.
The interesting thing to keep an eye on, and we don't have any news on this at this point, is Tony Allen. You know, I mentioned him kind of offhand as, you know, potentially covering Tony Parker. He still is dealing with that calf strain, and so, you know, they've been reevaluating him. They would really, really like for him to come back and play, but he did exit his last game of the regular season early, and as of this point, I think he's kind of been lingering between questionable and doubtful. So he might just wind up covering Kawhi anyway. So,
oh, you know what? Take that back. I'm just looking at this now. Memphis, he's out indefinitely, Tony Allen.
Oh, so there you go. As of this podcast, that must have just come out. So that's
it. It came out overnight.
Okay, that's awesome. Yeah, that's a really great piece of information that will open up a lot more minutes for these Memphis small guys. You know, I think we see more Vince Carter, and I think that actually makes Kawhi even better, because if he's not going to draw any Tony Allen at all, that could really get out of hand.
And I think they played, I'm going to look this up, but I believe they played some Wayne Selden a decent amount of minutes off the bench too, in that two guard-ish slot. So this is something I'll look at. I don't want to make any definitive declarations about this, but you're right. There's going to be value with the Allen thing, and I'm glad that I looked that up while you were talking, because I usually don't do that, and we would have sounded silly. So the last game on the slate is the Jazz and the Clippers. Another one of these very slow matchups, but this kind of falls into the same category for me of, we'll start with the Clippers. Are we seeing them maybe coming in as some value with the understanding that, yes, Utah is about as good as it gets on the defensive end, but they have a concentration around three players that it sure seems like this is where you're going to see just a whole lot of Paul, DJ, and Blake. Could that possibly just trump the matchup here, considering that this is, like, their offense is concentrated and we just know it at this point?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think I would be stunned with Chris Paul in particular, just because he controls the flow of the game. I would be stunned if Paul didn't play a huge role in this series, and that's not, you know, any sort of groundbreaking analysis or anything like that. But yeah, Paul is just so fundamental to, first of all, what they need to do in this series. It's going to be harder for their bigs to really get a lot done down low too, with Gobert down there. So I think Paul's going to have a great series. I'd be happy to play him in cash, really in any format whatsoever. He's a type of guy, he's very cerebral and can kind of pick and choose when he wants to go off or when he wants to try and go off anyway. And obviously this is the biggest possible stage. So I think, you know, as we move it, like if the Clippers make it in the second round, I wouldn't be shocked to see Paul priced 20% higher than this, 10% higher. So yeah, great play there.
My great hope on this slate going in is that people just forget that price matters on this kind of thing. And like, I think it's going to be easy to talk yourself into a LeBron because he's LeBron and he's going to play 40 minutes, not recognizing that guys like Chris Paul at 8,000 and Kawhi at 8,000, even with the matchups being bad, are just tremendous values on a short slate like this. I could see he's just having like 100% of Paul in cash games on this one, and just like him falling into that $8,000 guy who is a bargain because they had to price someone in these categories. You couldn't price everyone high, right? And so, because then you just like wouldn't even be able to physically make lineups without just having like a Thon Maker in there or something like that. Like it would just be, so Paul falls into that category for me. I love him. I think he and Kawhi feel like the guys that I will probably, or at least our system is going to want to just kind of build, generate cash games around. And I do think it's correct. Blake and DJ a little bit, not as clear. Jordan is a much better deal on DraftKings than he is on FanDuel. So just kind of take that into mind. I mean, what about a guy like Redick? Do you see him getting like, do you see them keeping shooters, him specifically out there for more minutes than they maybe did in the regular season? Not a guy who ever really played crazy high minutes, but it's the playoffs and he's, you know, clearly a threat from deep.
Yeah, he is, but so is like Jamal Crawford, Austin Rivers. I don't think that they
Is out. I just
oh, right, my bad. I don't think Redick is that much of an upgrade that they need to really change up their rotations much. It's not like in high leverage situations throughout the year that he really amped it up. I mean, he really amped it up only when the Clippers were shorthanded or whatever. So yeah, he's fine. I mean, I think we could see them normalize into a more consistent rotation where they just pick somebody and play him 35 minutes a game, just because most teams tend to do that. But you know, Doc isn't most coaches, and I think he kind of likes to stick with his plan. So yeah, I think not really enthusiastic about him and whoever they decide to trot out there at small forward, whether it's old Luke Mbamute or any of those guys. So yeah, unfortunately it's a three-man team. Two of the options are going to be down low against a tough interior defense, aren't particularly cheap, and Chris Paul looks great.
Utah side to finish this thing off. They are a team that also was dealing with their own injury issues coming down the stretch. They really didn't have to work too hard. Their playoff fate was pretty much sealed late. I mean, they were jockeying around, I think they were jockeying around just for home court in this series, and it didn't seem like they really cared too much near the end. Do you see, you know, this is the Jazz, they're making the playoffs. This is it. They're a good team. There's a chance that they can make a run. They have the pieces to do it. Do you see them tightening up their rotations and like guys like Hayward, Hill, Gobert, those three specifically? Like, do you see of those three, like who is the highest minutes, you know, let's say ceiling of those three to just to start? Hayward, Gobert, and Hill.
Well, Gobert probably has the highest minutes ceiling, but the thing with Gobert is he runs into the same problem that Paul George did, where he was already playing astronomical minutes going down the stretch. And while, yeah, he, once everything was sealed, he kind of dipped down into that 31 to 35 minute rotation. It didn't totally matter because his price went from like 9,300 then to 8,900 now. So we're getting a modest savings based on his peak pricing. I think some of that is offset by a less than optimal matchup. I mean, now that we're in the playoffs, what constitutes a good matchup is a little bit different. So the Clippers being basically league average against centers probably does make them a plus matchup in this playoff picture right now. But yeah, can't get too excited about a guy who, when we have so many values elsewhere and it's so difficult to pay up for a guy in the 9,000s, like we probably only pick a couple of them. Yeah, I'm just not over the moon on Gobert. I will say that I think the upside for Hayward and Hill is dramatic enough to where I would be considering them a little bit more heavily. I think Hayward in particular is a guy who flirted with, you know, $8,000 price and having that being fair during the regular season. And I think that they're going to lean on him from a shot-taking perspective quite a bit more in this series as well, as, you know, guys like Gobert get tougher matchups and might have, and George Hill in particular too, as guys like that have a tougher time finding shots. Gobert is going to be up against the Clippers' weakest defensive position. So, Hayward's going to be up against the Clippers' weakest defensive position. So, yeah, I could see Hayward being great in this series. I can't say I'm too psyched about really any of the other pieces here.
Hayward is a guy that falls onto that we sort of blessed with him coming into the lower end of his pricing just because of them not wanting to go overboard on every guy. 7,500 for him on FanDuel or DraftKings seems like a deal, and 7,300 on FanDuel just seems like, I'm just going to play him. And I just,
we got deals. We got steals. Gordon Hayward going too cheap on FanDuel and DraftKings tonight, Doug.
Well, I just love the idea. I'm already married to the idea of just kind of just playing all these mid tier sort of superstarish types and just avoiding the top end guys because you just don't need to do it, and having real nice floors kind of spread throughout. I agree with you that the Jazz, after that, we could see a wait and see approach on what they plan to do matchup wise with their rotations. You know, they'll start, you know, guys like Favors, but then he doesn't play a ton of minutes. They bring Joe Johnson and Inglis.
I think we could see Favors get unleashed at some point in this playoffs. I don't know. You know, he's been sitting. He's been in and out. And keep in mind, when he was really healthy, he was playing 35-minute rotation. So I don't see that happening in round one necessarily. But I would, and I wouldn't want to be a day early on guessing when Favors was going to play, because he could just play 20 minutes. But he presents them with a ceiling. I suspect if they're struggling in the series, you might see more Favors as well, because he presents a ceiling that none of their other power forward options really do.
All right, that's it for us. We will be back next week talking. So we'll jump on a couple pods next week on some of the slates where we didn't discuss.
Just the other half of the playoffs, basically.
Yep, sure. Exactly.
And if there's any big updates, et cetera.
Exactly. And there will be, too, because, like, you know, some things like this Tony Allen and getting a crystallization around what teams' plans are will provide us with some information over the weekend that I think we can probably utilize going forward. And if you want us to just see how we're doing that in real time, you can sign up for our projection system. The membership is dfsr.com/membership. The thought and care that we talk about the podcast here in terms of minutes, you can see that produced in our projections, which were fantastic this season. You can go into our comment section, our chat room, just ask our users what they thought of the NBA system, and they will give you an honest opinion, and you will then sign up and I think stick with us for the long term. dfsr.com/membership will get you a free 3-day trial in just $29.95 a month. After that, buddy, enjoy a weekend of basketball, and I will talk to you next week.
Yeah, be easy, man.